Hello and welcome to the Flight Free podcast, the place for uplifting stories, grounded adventures, and enlightening reasons why not to fly. For the next 25 minutes, we hope to inspire, inform, and entertain. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride.
Hello and welcome to the Flight Free podcast. I'm Bertie.
And I'm Maggie.
And this month we're going to be talking about climate anxiety. We'll be joined by Tori Choi, a climate activist and mental health advocate, and Hemlata Pant, a young climate campaigner who's overcome her own climate anxiety by starting the Newtown Nature Club in Bristol. Firstly, Maggie, what is climate anxiety?
Climate or eco-anxiety is described by the American Psychological Association as a chronic fear of environmental doom. And as a fairly recent psychological disorder afflicting an increasing number of people who worry about the climate crisis. Climate anxiety can manifest in many ways, such as anxiety, depression, anger, and disassociation. And it's becoming increasingly common. Which brings us nicely to our Flight Free Fact.
Flight Free Fact.
A recent survey shows that 60% of young people feel very worried or extremely worried about climate change. This was the largest survey of its kind, and it asked 10,000 young people in 10 countries how they felt about climate change and government responses to it. 45% of participants said their feelings about climate change impacted their daily lives.
I suppose that's not really surprising, is it? It's not surprising that people are worried. I suppose it shows that young people are very aware of the climate crisis. We've actually seen climate anxiety mentioned quite a lot in the testimonials we get sent about why people take the Flight Free pledge, including from our own team member, Tamsin, who says, "Eco-anxiety seems to be something that more and more of us are battling with, myself included. It's easy to become bogged down in doom and gloom when it comes to the climate change, especially when there seems to be increasing amounts of devastating climate disasters happening all across the globe. This is why I've decided to sign the Flight Free Pledge, by making an individual stance alongside thousands of like-minded people who also worried about the effects of climate change. Signing the pledge feels like a step towards hope and a better future for our planet." Many people say that taking action can help them deal with their climate anxiety. For a lot of people, taking the Flight Free Pledge seems to help because it's a tangible action that we hope will make a difference.
So let's welcome our first guest to the podcast. This is Tori Choi, the co-founder of Bad Activist Collective and author of It's Not Just You, which explores the relationship between mental health and the climate crisis. Tori, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've followed your work for a while, so this is a really exciting full circle moment for me to be on this podcast.
Our pleasure. So firstly, could you just introduce yourself and tell us about the work that you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I would call myself a climate justice organizer. A lot of what I try to do is mobilize people, work in sort of community spaces, work with different change makers and build coalitions. And I talk a lot about mental health, specifically with regards to the climate crisis. I know that eco-anxiety is a really big buzzword that's thrown around, but I really try to unpack what that means and then also dismantle some of the misconceptions associated with mental health and the climate crisis. Like, I think a lot of people fixate on fear of the future, but actually a lot of people are fearful now and have been fearful for a very long time. So it's about understanding the sort of timescales that it incorporates and understanding that we have very personal and individual experiences.
When did you first become aware of the term climate anxiety?
When it first became mainstream in the media was the sort of uprisal of Extinction Rebellion and that time when the media was really kind of pushing for this climate crisis, climate emergency narrative. And when that was really kicking off, you saw a lot more accounts from people all around the world, but though specifically in the global north, talking about how the climate crisis was making them anxious, how they didn't know how to channel that anxiety and all of these different emotions. And that's when I first came across the term. And I think with a lot of people, I was very quick to adopt it as something that related to how I was feeling. But it's only really in the last few years that I've unpacked what that actually means and thought about how you can't just be anxious about the climate crisis, because it goes so much deeper than just the physical manifestations of a dying planet. You know, we're talking about a system that has prioritized profits over people's well-being. So I really try and think about it more holistically, and I've actually kind of adopted my own term for it, which is environmental health. And there's a parenthesis around environ because it's mainly to emphasize that it's not about physical environments, but that actually they're completely connected. And I think that's what realms like eco-psychology and all of those different studies try to emphasize as well. Whenever I see activists, there's always this need and necessity to work as hard as they can, go as fast as they can, you know. And sustainability to me is a mindset. It's not just about greening your life. It's also about finding ways to make this work long term. So for me, I really try and get people to really think about, is this sustainable for you? Is this sustainable for the long run? Is this the sort of environment that you want to keep upholding, you know, where we're all burnt out and quite frankly depressed and anxious? And I think it's such a huge problem in our movements at the moment.
What ways have you found to cope with your own anxiety and just make yourself feel better?
I look at it as a sort of twofold thing, with long-term and short-term ways of dealing with these emotions. And when I think about things in the long run, I'm thinking about really dismantling the systems of harm that lead me to be a certain way. And for me, that's activism. So if I'm trying to dismantle the things that make me anxious at their root, i.e. be radical, then I will campaign. And I know that in the short term and long term, those can cause negative effects on your mental health. But I do think it is part of the theory of change that I hold, where I want to enact a better world through the work that I do. And I think that that ultimately will mean that it benefits my mental health in the long run, because I know I'm taking a stance. And then more proximally, things like going on nature walks and tapping into that fascination with the natural world and really appreciating what we do have is something that is so grounding for me. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Definitely. And two things that I can relate to there. One is the feeling that life is beautiful and cherish it, even though we're concerned about the future. But also the occupying part of your mind in that way is terrifically soothing.
Yeah, for sure. It feels like everything else around me becomes not irrelevant. It's there, but I'm so in the zone. And for a brief moment in time, I'm not thinking about responding to emails and messages and trying to organize and facilitate actions around crimes against humanity and all of that stuff. So it's really important to find ways to switch off sometimes.
Yeah. So how can we as a society tackle climate anxiety as well as on an individual level?
If we kind of widen the narrative a bit and we think about not as individuals but as a community, I do think that when communities come together and take care of each other, that's a huge thing that I think in quote-unquote modern day society, or rather in the global north, we have lost a lot of. And I think that when you find your community, and for me a lot of my community is in the climate space, we know that self-care and we know that our joy is a form of activism in many ways. And I think that it's so important to stick with people that understand why you're doing this work, because it's laborious and it's brutal sometimes. So for me, that's one aspect of it.
Do you find that talking about your anxiety helps?
Yeah, definitely. Talking about it is a form of therapy in and of itself. And I think also when you talk about these things, you give people permission and the courage to admit that they're also struggling, and a lot of people struggle in silence. And I've always been very vocal about my mental health struggles from quite a young age. And without realizing, every time I spoke about these things, because it was a form of survival for me, people would always say, thank you so much for speaking up, because I just didn't have the courage, or I didn't feel like I could find the words to describe what I was going through. So then it's kind of a positive feedback loop where you speak about it and you feel better, and then other people feel better, so then you feel better.
It's definitely, I mean, climate related anxiety and worries are definitely something I'm still learning to talk about and how to talk about. And yeah, there'll be a lot of groups of people that I interact with that aren't kind of available to talk about that yet. But there are places that I feel more comfortable talking about that, and groups that are friendship groups that I'm happy with.
Yeah, and I think I really think it's important to tap into your local communities to talk about how you're feeling and encourage people to do the same, because you'd be surprised how many people would, you know, feel very, very strongly about how much it's impacted them.
So why did you feel it important to write a book on the topic of climate anxiety?
Because I think I saw it really misrepresented in the media, and I think that the conversations that were being had routinely centered people in the global north and were very Eurocentric. I didn't feel like the discourse around eco-anxiety was reflective of some of the nuances involved. And having worked in movements with lots of different people, I think that there is so much to be unpacked there when we think about how different it is for specific communities. So for instance, you know, I've interviewed a lot of my friends in the movement to talk about these kinds of things. And one of my friends from Colombia, where it's the most dangerous place to be an environmental defender, said, we don't really have a term for eco-anxiety, and we don't really talk about that because our most proximal fear is actually being killed by police and being branded terrorists and enemies of the state. And I think that that is a testament to the fact that eco-anxiety, as it's known in the mainstream, perhaps doesn't really encompass the elements of climate justice that I see, whereas, you know, for environmental health, which some people might see as synonymous to eco-anxiety, it's actually a question to all of us to think about how much things like fear of the police and terror and political instability and dissent are part of that same narrative. I think it's really hard to pry apart these emotions that we feel, feeling anxious about the future, feeling anxious about the climate crisis, and not thinking about how the systems of oppression that exist come into play. And, you know, another thing that I found was that everyone was always talking about fear of the future. And this narrative rings true when you see what happened this summer in Germany and Belgium, where the floods happened, and people said, oh, well, we just thought that it wouldn't happen to us because we thought that it would be something that primarily affected those in the global south and poor countries. And they would say things like, oh, the climate crisis is finally here, to which I think, well, actually, no, it's been here for a long time. We've just had the luxury of not having it on our doorstep. You know, many of my friends have faced the realities of the climate crisis long before people here in the global north were speaking about it. And with that being said, the eco-anxious narrative is about fear for the future. And actually, there have been frontline communities who have been worrying about climate grief and environmental health much longer than I have. So I really wanted to create space for that discourse, and it's seeing mental health as an integral part of the climate justice narrative.
Thanks, Tori. That's so interesting. And we were actually talking earlier about how climate anxiety relates to climate justice, as eco-anxiety has become a bit of a buzzword for privileged Westerners. Whereas in reality, as you say, people have been suffering very real effects of climate change for a very long time, and mental health goes hand in hand with that.
Thank you, Tori. It's been lovely speaking to you, and we wish you the best of luck with the Bad Activist Collective and your upcoming book.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for creating space for me to talk about this, because I can say right now that it genuinely makes me feel a lot better and keeps me accountable and motivated to do this work in the long term.
Our second guest is Hemlata Pand, a teenager from Bristol who started the Newtown Nature Club as a way to combat her own climate anxiety. Welcome, Hemlata. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the inspiration behind the Newtown Nature Club?
Yeah, hi Maggie. It's nice to be here. As a teenager, all teenagers feel emotions really strongly. And that's what I felt when I moved in to my local area right at the beginning of the pandemic, February 2019. Because of being so isolated and not having that connection with the community for quite a while, what I really wanted was a connection with my community. And I felt like it's the best way to start, because I'd spent the summer, first summer in lockdown, doing gardening myself with my family in our new garden. And then I spent educating myself on the environment because I didn't really know much before that. And then I felt like doing gardening with others, with kids, was just like the natural next step.
How important was it that you and your neighbours were meeting up outside, do you think?
For children, especially because of the pandemic, it's like, I can't imagine what it would have been like for me if I hadn't been allowed to go outside and want to, you know, sort of meet people and do things like that as a young child, because, you know, you learn things from experiences, and especially in my area. But yeah, I'm really glad to have been able to facilitate it outside. I don't like framing it as in saying that when we go outside, we're near nature, because I don't think that's true. I think that humans are part of nature. It's not right to make them two distinct entities. But being outside does give that extra flavour when you are taking in the oxygen. And I know I talk a lot about eco-anxiety, and I think that is linked to your physical health, which is linked to, you know, when you get more oxygen when you're outside, it just feels so much better.
So when did you first come across the term eco-anxiety? What does it mean to you?
I first came across it 2 summers ago. That was when I really did not know much about the environment. And I was attending webinars with Action for Conservation, and they introduced me to this concept that when you don't know much, and then you're sort of bombarded with this idea of ecological doom, the idea that pictures of the world burning, right? You're faced with that. And especially as a young person, like I said, we feel emotions so strongly. It's hard not to be overwhelmed and feel really distressed.
So some people think it's irresponsible of climate activists to confront young people with that kind of imagery. How did you feel about it? Do you think that it's overcooked?
Well, it is true that, you know, it is what these sort of sensationalized things are, what gets the clicks, what gets the sort of headlines and things. But there is a way, if we are able to manage this, I think it's okay because it's true. But if teenagers were given a way to cope with it and to manage it, I think for me, those images are what inspires me. And I did feel eco-anxiety, I do sometimes, but I try to channel that into something more positive. Because I when I say that it's good for someone to feel eco-anxiety, it means that, you know, they really do care about the environment. So instead of turning that inside and not letting it out, bottling it up and letting it rip out of you, if you're able to then channel that into positivity, then that's the best way to go, I think.
I know you've said that you find all the negativity around the climate upsetting.
Yeah,
What role does optimism have in combating the climate crisis have, do you think?
Optimism is the only way, I think. I definitely, as a young person, I get called naive. But it is just so easy. It's really easy to say, right, the world's going to end, we can't do anything about it. But being an optimist, that's what's difficult and that's what's challenging. It's having that hope and imagining that it is true that the world as we know it now, the way we live in our world now, it's going to end because it's just not sustainable. But being a climate optimist, which I think we should all be, means that we need to be creative enough to imagine a more sustainable world where it's better because we're more conscious of what we do, and it's better because it's more compatible with what is sustainable. The world that I imagine, a more sustainable future that I want to live in, is full of the nature clubs like what we did. I always tell everyone to be a climate optimist because that is the best action you can take.
And the Newtown Nature Club brought you together with your neighbours. What was that like?
That moment when you unlock being able to do that with your community, it feels like it's what's missing. You don't know it's missing until you've got it. Now I walk down into the shops and I see a parent of someone who attended the club, see a child who attended, and it's just that feeling of I belong in this community, which then extends to I belong in this world, which extends to I should take care of it. It's very natural and very organic. So I do think that everyone should try and have that aspect of community in their climate action.
And it sounds like you had people of all ages participating in the club. Did you find that different age groups responded differently?
Yeah, definitely. There was families with toddlers and also 13-year-olds. It's a big age range, but because there was a park right there, I didn't want it to be scheduled, right, for 15 minutes we're going to do this, then this, then this. I realised very quickly that because they're next to a park, kids want to play, and I let them, because how can I say that them playing is not part of the nature club? And they're playing, and then sometimes they come over to do some potting, and then they're like, then they paint their pots first, and then they wait for them to dry, you know, they go play in the park. And I do think that actually that them responding differently is what makes it so wholesome and so natural play, a part of life.
Where did you learn your gardening skills?
Oh, my parents. My family is from Nepal, so they, you know, they know everything. And before we moved into this house, our garden wasn't as big and it was kind of cemented. And they still tried. We had one tomato plant in a pot on a balcony somewhere. I just remember the smell of it so strongly. And they take care, so much care of it. And I think the caring and nurturing of something is really is what stuck with me. It was the biggest healer of my eco-anxiety, like watching something grow and nurturing it and looking at it. If anyone is feeling, you know, eco-anxious, do try and do that.
That's a great tip. Thank you so much. And also, I'm really happy to hear what you said about optimism. I've heard that over and over again from people right at the top of the climate movement, like Cristiano Figueres from the UNFCCC, to people say you have to be, you're almost a prisoner of hope to work in the climate field. Thank you very much. It's been really fantastic to meet you. Thank you for joining us.
Great, thank you.
Bye. What did you think about that, Bertie? I thought it was really interesting how both Tori and Hemlata spoke about community as a way to deal with eco-anxiety.
Yeah, definitely. Surrounding yourself with people working towards the same goal is really important and something that I found really helpful in discussing my climate anxiety.
And they both talked about doing something. For Tori, it's activism against the system, which she's identified as the root cause of her anxiety. And for Hemlata, it's getting that simple joy from being outside with your community.
And now it's time for Destination of the Month.
Destination of the Month.
And this month we're talking about places where you can find peace and quiet and headspace in the middle of a busy city. Because there's research, I think, that shows that green spaces can really help with our mental health. Bertie, what's your pick?
So my pick is Pen Ponds in Richmond Park, which is in southwest London and is very close to where I live. And it's definitely my go-to place to get out of city life, to reset and clear my mind a little. And it's absolutely the perfect spot to take a book or take your music and just sit down and relax for a little bit. What about you, Maggie?
Well, I've chosen a place in Edinburgh. A river runs through Edinburgh. It's not so well known as rivers in some other cities. It's called the Water of Leith. You can, there's a walk you can take. You join the river at Stockbridge and you walk towards the Gallery of Modern Art and you follow along the river and there's a place where the water goes over a weir. And I think that sound of rushing water I find very soothing. It's like white noise, you know, and it can really calm you down. And you're walking through there's some housing, you go through a gorge under a bridge and then past the weir and then through some woods. And it's really surprising how rural it feels right in the middle of the city.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to find quiet places for yourself in the middle of cities.
Yeah, the importance of being outside seems to come up over and over, doesn't it? During the pandemic and when people were working at home, the value of getting outside seemed greater than ever. That's all for this month. Thanks once again to Tori and Hemlata for joining us.
And if you'd like to know more about Tori and the Bad Activist Collective, you can visit their website, badactivistcollective.com.
There's also a great article on the Bristol Post about Hemlata and the Newton Nature Club.
And next month, it will be the final podcast in our 2021 series. So we bring the Flight Free UK team together to reflect on the year and what we hope 2022 will bring. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for your company at this Flight Free podcast episode. We hope you enjoyed the journey. You can find out more about the campaign at our website, flightfree.co.uk, or find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Flight Free UK. Until next time, stay grounded.